Hello everyone, welcome back to The Scoop on Elderly Care. It has been a while since we have hosted an information session, but we have an amazing treat for you today, so I'm glad to have you back with us. I hope you enjoy today's information session.
I'm Bridget, your host for today. Today we are, well, first I should welcome everyone back to the Scoop on Elderly Care and say hello. Today we have an amazing opportunity though. I guess I'm just excited to introduce our guest for today. So as you may know, Unconditional Care Services, we're always striving to provide fresh new resources to our listeners and clients. Now, recently, I've had the opportunity to connect with a speech-language pathologist and thought she would be an amazing resource to share with others. Now, some of you may be thinking, speech? What does that have to do with elderly care? And you're going to find out because it's very important and vital. We know how important communication is in our day-to-day lives and our work lives and our relationships with our children. How much more important is it to that senior who may have dementia or may not be able to think of all the words clearly that they want to say or get their feelings or express their feelings? So without further ado, I want to introduce Lauren McVean, a speech-language pathologist with Capital City Speech Therapy Services in Raleigh, and our lovely guest today on The Scoop on Elderly Care.
All right. So just to start off, is there any questions you wanted to ask me, or do you just kind of want me to go into some stuff?
Well, I mean, you can tell us if you wanted to, you can start by telling us a little bit about who you are and why you're so passionate about your work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I started getting into speech therapy actually because I had a family friend who had Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got into it through kind of that voice side of the speech therapy. And of course, as he was kind of aging and, you know, had this condition, he was having like some other things go along with it. And some of those things did include like some cognitive changes and, you know, some communication difficulties as well. I did some other things where I worked in like a memory care unit and had some other experiences when I was still in school related to kind of the elderly population. And they're my favorite population to work with in general, of course. But I typically work mostly with aphasia. And aphasia is basically after a stroke, you can have language changes and it can be really hard to find some words. There's some speech changes that can happen. And so basically it's a rehabilitative service that we provide just to help people kind of get back some of their skills that they've kind of lost. But we see a lot of this too, just with the kind of elderly population that have dementia, is they have a lot of these same characteristics. And natural aging, you lose some of your ability to do some things. Like it can be a little harder to find some words. It can be a little bit harder to remember certain things that have happened in your life, but that's pretty typical. With things like dementia and Alzheimer's, it has to be a little bit of memory loss plus some other things. So usually you do see like an aphasia come along with it or other disorders, you know, swallowing disorders and things kind of along that side. And that's kind of where as speech therapists, we come in and kind of help to kind of educate the families on the changes that are happening, why they're happening, and the best ways to kind of approach people that have had dementia. and language losses in general, you know, it doesn't have to be dementia, but yeah, those kind of things.
It's very important that you did make that clarification and differentiation between the two, because I know as I was getting older, I didn't have someone smart like you telling me, you know, there, some of these little things that happen, and with working with the population that I work with, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I need to get tested. Like I was literally getting tested for early onset dementia and things like that. And that wasn't the case. It was just part of, you know, growing older. Yeah.
Yes, completely. And there's different parts of our memory, and the categories are, there's like episodic memory. And this is kind of the things that we remember from our past, like events. And sometimes just the word finding, like I said, that can be really a little bit more difficult as we age. We can do things like we might hesitate more before we start talking. Names might kind of disappear out of your head, but those are super duper typical. The things that are less typical are when you forget, like kind of what's called your semantic memory. So this is things like, what's the capital of France?
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah. Paris, you know, most people would remember that because they've heard it their whole lives and it's a very popular place. But with dementia, that might be something that you see is starting to disappear. And then things like the names of people that are super close to you might start kind of disappearing. And that's usually what the first stages are, when the family members start to kind of notice, like, something's going on. Like, you know, my mom couldn't remember my cousin's name, or, you know, she suddenly thought that it was 10 years earlier when she woke up this morning, and that's atypical. Or, you know, she got lost in the grocery store. And these are kind of things that are things that as we age, we continue to keep when we're having natural aging processes. They're kind of like habitual things that we do. So those are the things that in typical like aging, you don't lose those kinds of skills.
That's really good to know. And I know that I find that very helpful. For even, like I said earlier, for myself, I've found some things like adult onset stuff that it's like, what? And a lot of times people can't notice, but I know. So I'm very, you know, self-conscious.
And really, these changes start happening pretty much after the age of 25. Our brain stops producing new brain cells, basically. So even as a, you know, 28-year-old, technically, I'm already starting to have a little bit of some cognitive changes, and that's just naturally how our brain works. And it, you know, usually it's not something you notice until much later in life, when you start kind of thinking like, oh man, I cannot think of that person's name, and that wouldn't have been a problem, you know, when I was, you know, 30.
Oh, wow, 25. I didn't know that. This is some good information. How could you, like, so if I am a family primary caregiver, and I know my mom is trying to say something, are there any tools or techniques that I can use to make it easier for them to try to get their point across and share how they're feeling or what they're...
Yes, there's lots and lots of strategies that you can kind of teach people to use. A lot of the times I'll teach people kind of how to talk around something. So instead of getting hung up on the word and trying to force it out when it's not coming to you, just trying like a different word, a synonym, or, you know, just describing maybe what the function of the thing is that you're trying to come up with, or where you met the person. And also telling people, try to picture it in your head. Picture that person, and that's usually pretty helpful for people too, or try to picture like the way their name is spelled, if it's a name that you're trying to come up with. Those are usually the things that are a little bit trickier to kind of talk around versus, you know, something else. You can usually talk around it without saying the word.
What about like feelings and emotions? Because I know sometimes seniors, they're like, they feel a certain way, but they don't know how to put it into words, or they can't find.
Sometimes what I've done in the past is kind of provided a little bit of like an emotion chart. And sometimes that can be kind of helpful for people just with some basic emotions. You know, you don't have to necessarily put like super specific, like disappointed, or, you know, things like that, but kind of like a picture chart with color oriented too. You know, we tend to associate colors with certain emotions. That can be kind of helpful for people. And just providing choices. Like if you can look at your relative and you see something in their face, you know, maybe you see like a tightness in their face and they look maybe really stressed or confused, you can provide them some choices and just say like, how are you feeling? Are you feeling stressed or confused? Or what are you thinking? And just kind of giving them those words can sometimes help people to connect what they are feeling to the word that they've learned in the past. And that can help remind them like, oh my gosh, that's how I'm feeling. Yes, that's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling really stressed right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's really smart because I run into a lot of instances where the children treat their parents like.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that is very easy to do because, you know, you might feel like, oh, they're acting like my 10-year-old daughter, even though they're my parent. But, you know, elderly people have so many life experiences. They know so many things. And a lot of the times their comprehension's better than it may appear to be. They're really understanding like what all these words are that you're saying to them. And they may not be acting the same way. But just because they're not acting the same way doesn't mean that they're not still, you know, form responsible adults or, you know, people that are able to express who they are and understand that you're kind of demeaning them. One thing that we don't lose as much is our ability to recognize people's emotions. So people can usually recognize even, you know, with dementia, if somebody's talking down to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that can increase like some strain and some tension in the relationship as well.
That's smart. Mm-hmm. That's really good. And I want to get some more information about the emotions chart because I know a few instances off the top of my head that can be really useful.
Super useful. I'm a very big proponent of using visuals when working with specifically with like dementia or with aphasia, or those more severe kind of cognitive disorders, because you can use it for a lot of things. You can use it to orient people, of course, you know, keeping a calendar up or a clock nearby, or even putting up like a sequencing picture for people to see, like, this is what I'm supposed to do to brush my teeth in the morning. Providing visuals can also help the elderly population to be more independent too. You know, instead of having to rely on their daughter to tell them like, this is how I need to get dressed, you know, you can give them a visual and then they feel kind of like they're doing it more so themselves. Mm-hmm.
Those are some really good ideas and I'm making note of those. I'm going to use those with certain clients. I feel like they'll be very useful.
Yeah. So I think the main thing with just talking to like the elderly population, I know me and you had kind of talked a little bit about how as caregivers, we should try to approach people when we're talking to them that have maybe dementia or something. And I had actually kind of gone back through my notes and found like a great acronym that I've been using, if you want to hear it. But it's called FOCUSED. And it basically, the F stands for like face your patient or face your mother, try to maintain eye contact. The O is for orient them. And then the C is for trying to continue the same conversation for as long as possible without getting frustrated. And that's something that can kind of happen a lot when we're talking to, you know, our mom and they think it's 1980 and it's 2021, you know, it can get kind of frustrating. And you kind of want to speed the conversation up and say like, no, you're wrong. It's, oh my gosh, stop talking about 1980s. It's not that time anymore. But really the best thing to do is to be a good listener to people. And so there's gentle ways, not to go off on a tangent, but there's very gentle ways that you can orient people. And so, you know, if they say, oh, I love that day in 1981, you might say like, tell me about that day instead of saying it's not 1981 anymore. It's 2021. And you can kind of continue the conversation along those lines. Ask them questions, let them reminisce, because reminiscing is so good for their cognitive skills. It helps them to remember how to sequence, how to tell a story. There's so many skills that come along with retelling our memories. And so when we're orienting people, you know, instead of flat out saying like, it's 2021, who's our president, you know, along those lines, if they don't think that they're in 2021, then we kind of have to gently bring them back to the present, kind of in that way. That's an easy way to do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think when you confront them in a more no, it's not kind of way, then, I mean, you got to kind of pick your battles, right? So how important is it that they, you know that right now or believe you right now when you can kindly nudge them into the future?
Yes, exactly. And kind of going along that whole line of like, you know, we talked earlier about if someone's having trouble coming up with a word, you can give them choices, like I said, or you can say things like, oh, did you mean this? And just seem like you're really understanding and, you know, keeping that good eye contact, nodding your head. We do that in normal conversation. You know, when we don't understand something someone's saying, we say, oh yeah, did you mean this? That's a great line to use with the elderly population when, you know, specifically with memory disorders, when they're maybe getting stuck on something and it's not quite lining up with what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, sorry, I was going back to my acronym. I was talking about like other things you can do, like the S is kind of like structuring your conversation so that you give them choices. So, you know, instead of saying like, oh, it's time to take your shower, you can say, do you want to brush your teeth first or go take your shower first? And just to give a little bit more of that independence, the way we phrase things just communication wise is just super duper important for maintaining dignity.
That's a very good point. I have found that it's good to give them choices so they still feel like, you know, you have a task list of things that need to be done before your shift ends or before you leave or something. But if you give them a choice, like, okay, they have to brush their teeth and take a shower, so I'm gonna let them choose between these two things. So both will get done, but it doesn't matter which comes first and which comes second.
Exactly. You're right. Cause those are just things you have to do. And so the more options you get, the better, you know, with food, like you may want them to eat a vegetable, but you don't have to give them the one they don't like, you know, you could ask them what they want to eat. Maybe ask them if they want to help you somehow, you know? And that's also a big thing for me with just like maintaining that dignity and that, independence is giving tasks to do. Do you guys do kind of some stuff like that?
It's part of our training is so, and even when I'm in the home with a new caregiver or even an experienced caregiver, and it's a new client, I always use that technique specifically. Well, we know that we have a list of things, but the order might not be important for some things. So give them a choice because seniors fear losing independence. They don't like to be talked down to or demeaned, and they feel a loss of control, right? So they're already losing control of different bodily things, the mobility, right? So they probably don't want to lose control of, well, I want to brush my teeth first tonight, or, you know, and you're making them get in the shower. Well, that might be your order, but it doesn't necessarily have to be theirs. As long as it gets done, it's the most important thing.
And, you know, losing like your cognitive and communication skills really can be harder for people than giving up those physical things. You know, you feel like those physical changes are so natural in the aging process. But when you start recognizing that, you know, you're losing your language or you're losing your cognitive skills, that can be much, much harder for people to kind of deal with emotionally.
Right. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I know.
No, I'm sure.
Kind of panic. Oh my gosh. So well, go ahead and finish your
question. No. I wasn't going to say anything. What were you going to say?
Okay. So I have a question. Yeah. So what are paralinguistic skills and how can we use them with the elderly?
Okay. So paralinguistic skills are, the kind of the nonverbal communication that we do. So it might be where our eyes are or what our mouth's doing, what our body posture says about what we're thinking. You know, talking with your hands is a paralinguistic skill. It's one that I probably do too much, you know. But it's basically how we give off how we're feeling without saying anything. And so when we're talking to people and we feel frustrated, it's very difficult to keep that off of our face, even if we're feeling that way. And a lot of the times people will portray what they're thinking without meaning to. And so this can be very detrimental when you're trying to talk to a senior, just because, you know, they may be saying they want to do something and you're like, you can't do that right now. You get frustrated, but you're trying to keep your voice level, but you may be showing it in your facial expressions, how you're really feeling. But it can also be talking about paralinguistic skills can also relate to how your voice sounds and the inflection you're using. And so, of course, if I was talking to a small child, I might use a very slow kind of pandering voice, but that's not what you'd want to use, of course, with an adult, even if, you know, they have had cognitive changes. So just along the lines of what you've been talking about, that's pretty much what paralinguistic skills are, is just being aware of kind of, I don't want to say the vibe you're putting off, but yeah, it really is much like the vibe that you're putting off when you're talking to somebody. You know, if you're looking at your clock when you're trying to work with somebody, that tells them when they're reading it, like, oh, they're not interested in what I have to say or with helping me.
That's good.
Yeah. So I think that's like something that's probably the hardest thing when you're like a child trying to take care of your parents. That's a hard one to really work on, you know, especially with the way your voice comes out too, and trying to sound patient, you know, using maybe like simpler sentences without being demeaning with it. You know, those can be kind of difficult to manage.
Those are good thoughts and good tools and techniques to use when speaking to your parent or a loved one, whether elderly or disabled, right?
Because
sometimes age isn't even a factor. Right. So sometimes we can just, if they need, the more they need, sometimes we can bring what's happening at home or whatever we're stressed out to the job, and we can kind of take it out on them. So that's a very good, we've got to be aware of our paralinguistic skills.
Yes, it's a very big word for basically just the way your face looks and the way your voice sounds. Yeah. And there, of course, those skills are so important for any job we do. You know, it doesn't have to just do with senior care, of course. Yeah, it's just anyone that you're talking to, you know, you got to be aware of what your posture's doing, if you're looking at them, just so that everyone feels like you're taking them really seriously. People don't like to feel like they're not important in general. Yeah.
Even if you've heard the same story 20 times, it's still probably... for them, the most important story they have to tell. And just listening sometimes will make them feel much better about themselves, you know?
And you're so right. And that's when it can get frustrating, is when you've heard that same story 100 times.
Over and over again. Comes with the territory, but what a lovely territory it can be.
It really can be. I know that our elderly population, and you know, once again, with and without memory disorders, have so many great stories to tell, so many life experiences, and you know, it can be hard, like you said, if you've heard it 100 times, to really listen intently. But it's just so nice for, you know, your mother or your the person you're taking care of.
And what I love about the tools that you gave us today, we can use them not only with elderly, but in relationships in general. I really love that. A lot of times, you know, even in higher education, you take communication classes and they give you a good foundation and different tools and techniques to get your words across or your meaning across in different ways. But it goes much deeper. And I think today you've helped us realize that it's more than just a word. There's the tonation, you know, there's your facial expression. There's so much more involved into it. And then when if you throw in dementia or something like that, it goes very broad. It can get a lot deeper and wider with a different dementia and their personalities as well. Can you tell us, how can clients or staff get in touch with you?
We have a website. It's Capital City Speech Therapy. And I kind of have like my bio on there and stuff, but we have a main office number that can be called, and they have to kind of go through our office if somebody wants to schedule a visit with us in particular. But I mean, I can give you my email. It's lmcbean@ccst.coach. And, you know, if anybody just had like a question, you know, I don't mind emailing somebody back with a question or, you know, if I have a resource, I'm always happy to kind of share those.
And hopefully we can have you come back again in the future and we can actually utilize or practice or learn how to effectively use some of the skills like the emotions board. Believe it or not, that's something that I've heard of and you've worked with, but you would be surprised at the amount of people that are like, what's an emotion board and how do you use it? So I think that would be effective. And some of the other tools we can practice on the focus acronym, you know, all of those things would be great. And we'll just let you just have the session and just teach.
Sounds fun. I've got lots and lots of strategies I like to use just for like giving functional kind of, enjoyable activities for people that are elderly, you know, trying to make them feel like they're helpful. Everyone loves to feel helpful no matter what age you are. 3-year-olds love to feel helpful, you know.
For sure. And so we'll definitely do that. We'll try to plan it. I know you stay rather busy with your schedule, but if we could get you to come back to do something like that, that would be great.
Yeah.
Just educational segment. I'll introduce you and the floor will be yours.
Sounds great. I'd love to come back and talk again. I love this subject. So,
well, what we're going to do in conclusion, I wanted to let everyone know that, Lauren's information will be on the podcast flyer. It'll be on the web, our website. It will also be on our social media and everything. So you can listen to this podcast as much as you want. We'll also let you know and update you when she's going to be coming back and doing some educational sessions. So thanks so much, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you.
So the Scoop on Elderly Care is brought to you by Unconditional Care Senior Services, hosted by Bridget Boyd, CEO and founder, and edited by Rachel Livingstone. Be sure to check us out at Facebook and Instagram at Unconditional Care and on our website at unconditionalcarenow.com. Okay, let's chat soon. Thank you so much.